Coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK,
The Lutheran Inquisitor, examining pressing issues and their ramifications for the Church today.
Hello and welcome to The Lutheran Inquisitor. Today we are glad to be speaking with Dr. Ian Christie Miller. Dr. Miller has been a guest with us before and we're delighted to have him back. Dr. Miller has developed a machine which looks at the watermarks of ancient books and manuscripts to date them. And today we'll be discussing with him some early Lutheran works, particularly the Catechism, in the Baltic states. Dr. Miller, welcome back to Lutheran Radio.
Thank you. I appreciate being on air with you.
Now, as I mentioned, we're going to be looking at some of the early Lutheran books as found in the Baltic states. Can you tell us how your research began and how you've ended up in the Baltic states?
My early researches were into the works of a French Franciscan Kabbalist, and that involved something with watermarks, and I then went further and became entranced by the way that the Psalms are so often the first books which were printed in different languages. Even the tiny language between France and Spain became a Calvinistic stronghold, and their first book was in their own language, and it was the Psalms. And more prominently, there is the 1640 first book printed in British North America, the Bay Psalm Book. I had the privilege of working on two copies of that in Boston, one of which has recently been sold for, I think, $14 million. So the Americans do appreciate the value of their first book, which was the Psalms. And I then furthered that by looking at other languages that had used the Psalms. And fairly quickly, that took me, of course, to the Lutheran world. And that's where we are at the moment.
And as we begin our conversation, you mentioned you'd like to start in Finland. So can you tell us about some of the work you've done on the early Lutheran writings in Finland?
I certainly would. Now, of course, I don't know how familiar your listeners will be with the Baltic, and I am gradually learning more about those wonderful countries. And so I'd like to go around in a clockwise direction, starting from the north, which is the brave land of Finland, and then talk briefly about Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, and Prussian and Old German. First, I would very much like to give a note of dedication, because I've been so struck by the way that these books still exist. Many occasions they only exist in fragments, and many occasions that's because people have taken great care to preserve them. And so I do have an increasing respect for brave archivists and librarians who've gone out of their way, sometimes at great peril to themselves, to preserve these books. Anyway, going back to Finland, the first book printed in Finnish is a Lutheran catechism by Agricola. And I've done a fair amount of research on this, but I know you've got quite a lot to tell me about Agricola, Michael Agricola, who is the author of this book.
Yes, Agricola was the first Finnish Lutheran bishop, and he studied in Wittenberg under Martin Luther in the late 1530s. And he was also very instrumental in translating the New Testament and the Psalms into Finnish, and really instrumental in the early Finnish language. But that's kind of all I know about him, but you have his book.
Yes, there are parts of his book scattered over the northern parts of the Baltic, in Sweden and also in Finland itself. There's some doubt as to when that book was actually printed, and I'm happy to say that my watermark research has been able to clarify the dating really quite a lot. The book is sometimes dated 1543. My research has showed, and my wife and I were able to go to Uppsala and to Västerås to image their copies of the book. And as we expected, there are watermarks in it, and the watermark was a very distinctive sphere shape. And research from the excellent Bernstein online database of watermarks did allow me to learn a lot about that particular sphere-shaped watermark. there are no recorded instances of that watermark before the year 1550, and that starts off in Angoulême, near Bordeaux, and that's where the paper was almost certainly produced, because it's a French paper, and subsequent plots of where that paper has been recorded spread out, and to the south, the most southerly point is Zaragoza, and then as the years go on, it's found as far afield as an arc stretching up across the Baltic and even into the very heart of Russia. So the evidence from the watermark is that the sphere watermark did not appear elsewhere before 1550, which, to say it politely, casts somewhat of a shadow on the possibility of the date being 1543. So that was one of the first findings from watermark research, and that was in the Finnish book. And then perhaps we should pass on to the Estonian book. And this is an even more remarkable survival story, because it wasn't until 1904 that parts of the book were first discovered. And there are no other parts of it, no other fragments anywhere. And they were discovered by a man who was researching books in Tallinn. And among the binding of a book, he found these minute fragments, which were carefully preserved, put in glass, and are now an Estonian national treasure. That's in 1904. Sorry, no, I'm mistaken. 1904 was when the fragments of the Finnish book were found. It was 1929 when the fragments of the Estonian book were discovered. And, of course, we think of the history of Estonia since then, how it suffered under German occupation and Russian occupation, and yet they still have these fragments, which are regarded as an emblem of the ability of the Estonians and the Estonian spirit and culture to survive, which I think is a very fair comment. And by using this watermark researching equipment on it, I discovered what looked like a watermark in it. Now, you've got in front of you a printout with a little red arrow which is pointing towards two columns of text, which is where one would expect the watermark to be. And careful use of imaging equipment and Photoshop did allow me to enhance the backlit image. Now, when I say backlit, I mean by putting an electroluminescent light sheet under the fragment of paper. The light shines through, and the camera records what it can see. And the result of that was that I'm pretty sure that what we've got in that fragment is just the very tip of the base of a Gothic letter P. If we measure the distance between the tips, it's 1.8 centimeters. And I was then able to contact another place, thanks to the Bernstein database, which has a similar Gothic P watermark. And that turns out to be in a letter written by Martin Luther himself. And that, again, is a Gothic letter P. It's 1.8 centimeters across the base of it. And there are good grounds for thinking it's the same paper that was used for the book. It was also used by Martin Luther to write this letter. That letter, by the way, is a recommendation. It's for a job interview for a man who wanted to be a doctor of medicine to Duke Albrecht, who was one of the most influential people in the Baltic and who was significant in establishing his Lutheran domain, perhaps the first ever Lutheran domain that was ever set up in that area.
Is this book in Estonian or German?
The book is in, I think, both languages, but there are only fragments of it. And happily, one of the fragments is the last page, which gives the place of printing and the date of printing. And so this is one of those rare instances which we actually do know where it was printed and when it was printed. The letter of Luther's was, I think, 1541, and the Estonian book is 1535. It just so happens that the paper which was used by Luther has this very distinctive Gothic P watermark in, and I'm increasingly confident that the fragments of the Estonian book also have that same Gothic letter P watermark, indicating that it was the same paper manufacturer that supplied the paper for both. The paper will have been widely distributed, and I found that very often the paper distribution follows the ports of the Hanseatic trade group.
So how about if we follow our map around then, and you mentioned the next spot is Latvia.
Latvia, I need to ask if I may make an appeal on your program, because the fragments of that have disappeared. They are recorded that there was a 1525 missile in Lübeck, printed in Latvian and Livonian, but it appears that when it was printed, the Roman Catholic authorities in Lübeck ordered it to be destroyed, and all the copies except for two were destroyed. But just before the Second World War, there is a record that somebody has seen a copy of it in Lübeck. I've tried to find it. If one of your listeners can help me find it, I would be very pleased to hear from them.
And what would this be a copy of?
Well, again, we expect it to be a Lutheran catechism, but we don't actually know because we haven't got a sight of it.
We just know that it was there at one time, and we hope that it'll eventually show up.
Yes, that's right, because as we've seen spectacularly, Finnish copies of the book have turned up unexpectedly, the Estonian book turned up unexpectedly, and just within the last 2 days we've heard of an original Caxton 1470 printed work that's one page has turned up in this country. So we live in hope that it will appear.
You never know.
The next, as we go round in a clockwise circle, is Lithuania. And the first book there is 1547, a Lutheran catechism again. And once again, it is a true survivor. There is one copy in Turun in Poland and one copy in Vilnius in Lithuania. And I've been able to image all the pages of that using front lighting and back lighting. The back lighting produced clear evidence that there was a very distinctive crown in the middle of the paper, where we would expect to find it, actually hidden away in the corner of the book, because the book's an octavo, so the book is made up of a sheet of paper with 8 pages printed on one side of the sheet and 8 on the other, and then it would be cut and folded. And of course, perversely, the cutting and the folding go right through the watermark. Nevertheless, it was possible to identify the watermark. It was a crown, and really quite a distinctive one, because crowns were very popular as a watermark, but generally they were sort of three-tiered papal-type crowns. This one is exceptional in that it's an open crown, relatively flat, and it happens to be the same crown that was in the watermark seal of Königsberg, appropriately named, of course, for a crown. And that crown emblem appears on their seals going back generations before the 1547 publication of this book. So it shows that in the Baltic area, I think, there is this increasing trend towards independence, not being dependent on the powers that be were in the south, but more forging their own culture and history and emblems and language.
But at the same time, all being based on the Christian faith.
Yes, that's certainly true. And it's pretty certain that that Königsberg area was the first establishment of a recognized Lutheran civilization, if you like, in the Baltic.
And you mentioned within Lithuania that this actually is pretty close to the whole catechism, as I understand it, unlike the fragment in Estonia or the little bit in Finland. This is actually quite a bit more.
Yes, there is. It has integrity. The whole volume is there, and it's not been tampered or interfered with. And it also has the remarkable distinction of having 20 pages with music annotated to it. And when you kindly asked me to come before, we did play a section of that, and you might like to be able to patch that in again. I had the great pleasure of going to London, and by arrangement with the priest of the Roman Catholic Church in London at St. Casimir's, we were able to record one of his very gifted parishioners, not only playing the music, but also singing the music. So we've got things like Psalm 103, This is a day to rejoice, and the Lord's Prayer, now recorded and available for anyone to listen to, as they were annotated and appeared in that book, dated 1547. Whereas the other books I've mentioned have been the first books printed in those countries which were Lutheran, in the case of Poland, it's not true that it was the first book printed, but it's certainly that there was an imprint of a very early imprint of a Lutheran catechism in Poland, and I know the Poles are a particularly robust people, and the same year, or within a year of the first edition coming out by a man called Seklucjan, his arch-rival, called Sandecki Maleski, produced his own version of it, which led to a certain amount of discussion between the two as to who had the more appropriate version, and that was an argument that rumbled on for some years, but nevertheless, there was this Polish translation in 1545 by Seklucjan, and in a similar way, in the same year, there was a Prussian Old German one, and that was printed in Königsberg, again by this printer Hans Weinreich, and that has Prussian on one side and Old German on the other, and that does seem to have been a very popular product, because within a year, another edition of it was put out. There were some small changes to that. Of course, there was considerable doubt at that time as to how to teach people to read these different languages and to be able to translate them accurately from perhaps German to Prussian. And I think that in a way that highlights another aspect of these books. They're, from a religious point of view, obviously very significant, and the differences between them, as we saw with the angelic salutation, is an example of that. They're also real signpost to cultural development. And I would take as an example of that the amount of Latin in the books. And a quick example of that is the Swedish book, which is reputedly by Michael Agricola. Now, of course, Agricola is a Latin word, means farmer, and that wasn't his birth name, but it was the name that he adopted because he was from a peasant farming agricultural background. And it's very revealing to see in the other books how much Latin there is in them, what part Latin is allowed to play. Sometimes it's referred to in the prefaces of the book as standing in the background to the dominance of the authority of the language. In other parts, it's almost airbrushed out entirely. And the Baltic languages are given huge prominence to these books. Many of them contain educational aids, lists of the vowels and the consonants, and how to read the languages. So they were real groundbreaking events, moving the emphasis from the priest having the power and the authority and the knowledge, to try and give education, access to knowledge, to the people at the ground level.
Yes, and that was the whole point of the catechisms, was to have the parents teach their children the faith in a very easy to read, to learn, to memorize way.
Yes, I'm listening carefully to what you say, and I would say that even from my outside the Lutheran community perspective, that's very, very evident from the format of the book and also from the rather earthy style of the translations that's used. Many of these works are not available in English, and the Baltic languages, Russian and German and so on, have got a reasonable coverage of these books, but there is really quite a dearth of information in English about them, so I've been heavily reliant on other people's views. But the basic understanding is that the language used is of the people.
Dr. Miller, you talked about the Lithuanian Catechism, and you had mentioned that you had the joy of having this recorded. We're going to take a few minutes, listen to that recording in the original Lithuanian.
Yeah.
Dr. Christy Miller, you talked about all these Baltic catechisms and how somehow they're related to things going on in the UK, in England. Can you tell us how that might be?
My perception is that the era was one of huge turmoil. I think everybody would agree with that. It was a time of very considerable intolerance, and there was terrific pressure on people to conform to the establishment. Those who didn't were liable to suffer. And that was true to some extent for the Finnish world. At the same time, it was very much the case in England. And 1525 was the year when William Tyndale was in Antwerp, and he wrote, published his quarto edition of the New Testament. And he was persecuted for that. He was pursued for that. And only again a few fragments of that 1525 quarto still exist. The following year, he produced a smaller version of it, 1526, his New Testament. And that only exists in two places in England and one in Germany. And a few years later, 1536, Tyndale himself suffered the fate of being arrested, strangled, and burned. And nevertheless, his work has survived. It was adopted, 85% of it was adopted for the translators of the King James Bible, and has moved into really everybody's, every English-speaking person's vocabulary in one or another since then. So, in a way, England and the Baltic nations have a lot in common, I would suggest. We have books that have been produced under duress, have survived, and their influence continues.
Well, Dr. Ian Christy Miller, we thank you for your time and for the insights into how Luther's small catechism played such an influential role in the beginning of the Baltic languages. Mm. And we wish you every blessing and success as you continue your research.
Thank you. I value that, and I need that.
Thank you for listening to The Lutheran Inquisitor with Pastor John Ehlers. If you have any questions or comments about the issues raised in this program, send an email to info@lutheranradio.co.uk. The podcast of this show is available from our website. Check our program online and stay tuned.